The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis and welcome to Music Weekly. In today's podcast, electro-acoustic sensation Jamie Woon tells us about working with the Elusive Burial and why he's loving the direction of bass music at the moment.
I guess, you know, that's the exciting thing, was hearing sort of dubstep, and yeah, I felt like there was an opportunity to do some pop music that's influenced by that kind of stuff, and there's a whole wave of it coming out.
Album Club replaces Singles Club this week as we discuss the long-awaited debut album by rap's leading lady, Nicki Minaj. We've got your feedback, plus DJ Tayo is here with his take on proceedings. That's all in Music Weekly. Hello, Rosie.
Hi.
How you doing? You're
all
right?
Well, how are you?
Excellent. I'm all right. I've got a bit of a cold.
Oh, me too.
Really? Yeah, it's going round, isn't it? Mm. Fantastic. You heard it here first, people. Breaking news. As mentioned in the intro, our third member today is DJ, music consultant, club promoter and producer and Arsenal podcaster. It's Tayo.
Thanks for mentioning that. Hello, Alexis. Good to see you again. It's good to be inside the Guardian building, actually.
Isn't really?
It? As a sort of lily-livered liberal like myself, it's quite exciting to wander around the
bosom of lily-livered liberalism.
Exactly that. Yeah, thanks for having me in.
So you are a bit of a podcast yourself, aren't you?
Yeah, once a week I rant with some fellow Arsenal fans, Ian Stone, Alan Davis, about the Arsenal. Yeah, I've done quite a few. I started off doing a lot more music kind of stuff, and. Mm-hmm. If I can combine like my obsessions with sort of football and music, then I'm very happy. But yeah, I'll do that.
Because I mean, you're still as busy as ever with music. Still do the tracksuit parties?
Yeah, I do one-off random parties around London, around some of the festivals actually, just to getting people to dress up in as old B-boys and celebrating kind of 90s hip hop and anything kind of old school like that, 80s boogie, drum and bass. But yeah, that's one of the things I do, and. To sort of DJ around the world, it always sounds really harsy. Hey.
But do you really? I mean, when you say around the world, what sort of place you've been playing?
I've been fortunate over a career, if you can call it that, to sort of been almost everywhere. The last place I sort of was in America for the Burning Man Festival and playing over there this summer.
Wow, the Burning Man's the one in the desert with all the hippies and the nude.
Exactly that, yeah.
I believe it's technically known.
Yeah, and anyone who goes there will then say to you, you have to go there to experience it. But it is really true. It is completely amazing. It's as much a music festival as it is a kind of just a spiritual thing. And
You're there, do people go up to you and go, are you DJ Tara from the Arsenal podcast?
No, that only happened when we went to the LCD sound system. Yeah. And I was kind of introducing myself to you, and I don't think I mentioned it. I think you mentioned it to me.
And someone said, oh, you might know him from the Arsenal podcast.
And you sort of tried to get out of it as politely as possible. But then just to validate me and my existence, someone soon after came up and said, are you Tara from the Arsenal podcast?
Oh, fantastic. That's
so
what
you want. That was decent. But yeah, as I was saying to you just off air, an entire kind of career spent in music has been obliterated by my love for football and the fact that most people care about football a lot more than they do about music.
It's a sad indictment of our times. You have also been back in the studio, been spending time in the studio. Now, we knew each other a long time ago, and you were at the time a sort of leader of the New School Breaks scene.
Oh, Christ, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, is that a bad thing? Is that, am I just effectively saying?
No. You shouldn't walk out on your kind of a musical past. I used to bother you all the time as a plugger, as a club promoter, as a DJ, as a producer of sort of underground breakbeat music, if you will, telling you that it was going to be the next big thing. I mean, it's still around now. I kind of compare all of that now to the kind of breaks thing, as it were, is kind of a lot like hardcore in the sense that it's fairly derided, but there's still lots and lots of people who like it. I always used to think that I liked sort of, let's call it bass music, is kind of what I used to be happy with, because I liked garage and breakbeat and hardcore and all that kind of electronic music as much as the other bit, really. But in terms of trying to get into your magazine back in the day, then we had to kind of put a straitjacket on it, give it a genre title, and try and make it out as the next big thing. But
you've been producing sort of dub stuff recently.
Yep, my first love is dub music. So what I've been trying to do more of now is make precisely what I want. It sounds silly, but more what I want rather than what's kind of necessary to to go and play out, as it were, sure. as a DJ. And if you lock me in my room by myself, then I'll listen to Harry Moody and Lee Perry and Scientist Records. Okay. And that's what I've tried to do.
Okay. Well, we're going to hear a recent track you've made now. This is called Vampire. Is
that Vampire.
Vampire, yeah. Of course. Vampire.
that's just the street spelling.
Yeah, elements. Yeah, absolutely. That's the way the kids pronounce it, isn't it? Yeah, I wouldn't know.
It was actually written out like that by the lead singer, was a 26-year-old white kid from France. Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like a young Horace Andy, if you ask me. But he wrote it out like that, and who was I to complain?
So okay. Well, let's hear it now. This is Vampire.
You promise me the glory, but I don't want this. You want I leave my crew and family, but I don't want that. You promise me lots of money, but I don't need this. So stop to bore me silly, yeah. Stop to bore me silly.
Oh, that was Vampire by Tyo meets Acid Rock. Uptown. That's great. That's really good. It's it's not what I was expecting. It's a lot more.
It's always like that.
It's got that little bit of British flavour to it.
I hope so. Yeah, you know, it's got all the influences of obviously dub, as I say, which I'm into. But you know, we live in the UK. We live in London, and dub and dubstep and bass is an important part. So I've tried to put all that in as well. So. So,
wicked.
Yeah, I'm glad you like it.
No, that's out on Monday.
It is out on Monday, yeah. So it's a nicely timed happy
promotional opportunity.
It was a happy accident, I liked it.
Bass music in general has really gone big in the last couple of years, hasn't it? I mean, as a long-time champion of this sound, that must please you.
It's exciting to see that so many people are hearing it outside of just a kind of, you know, the genre bubble. And you've got to really hand it to the kids, really. The most obvious example being Scream and Benger, and what they do individually, what they do as Magnetic Man with artwork. It's just, and obviously sort of Katie B, which is someone who started off. I think when to hear something like, you know, the Rinse crew with Genius and Zinc and so on, they've done nothing but carry on doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
But then the world's almost
so
come
to them.
The world's come to them, which is really exciting. So there's you know, the key no compromise and no sellout, which has always been a kind of a massive part of underground music. It hasn't. They haven't had to change anything. You know, the way all their tracks are available on the internet, the way that the message is spread now, which is so different from when I was sending you records.
Yeah, of
for
course.
Example,
yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
Ago, means that, you know, people can go and find what they want as opposed to just being told what they want. So that's exactly played the massive part in why this music's got as big as it has.
We're going to talk now about, I suppose you'd call it an offshoot of bass music. We recently featured Night Air by Jamie Woon on Singles Club. Went down rather well, so we thought we would get him in the podcast. Jamie is from a strong musical family, his mother being Mae McKenna. No, me neither. A folk artist and backing singer for Bjork. I'm sure she's hugely famous. He also shares a house with Jazz's Portico Quartet. Did they get nominated for a Mercury Prize?
Yes.
Portico Quartet?
Yes.
There are a multitude of influences in his music, including jazz, as well as contemporary styles like dubstep. We sent Emma Warren along to meet Jamie, but first let's remind ourselves of just how good Night Air is.
I've acquired a kind of
So Night Air is your new single, and it's the thing that's really kind of gathering a lot of attention towards you. And I heard it described somewhere as night bus soul, and I wondered whether or not that was a kind of description that resonated with you.
You know, as I was very, very influenced by meeting Burial and kind of his soundscape, and he kind of he pointed me towards a lot of sounds for this record, and opened my mind up to a lot of new sounds and a place where my voice could sit amongst those sounds in production. So. You know, I definitely owe a lot to him in that respect, and essentially, I've always wanted to make soul music. You know, it's all my heroes: Stevie Wonder, Jeff Buckley, you know, Radiohead. I always think of Radiohead as a soul group, but you know, like all of my heroes, really. I've always wanted, you know, write really nice songs, and I just found this as a sort of an aesthetic to kind of that really fits the mood of what I like singing about and what I'm communicating at the moment. I think it's sort of similar sort of soundscape to the one that Bjork did so well, you know, with her sort of homogenic album and stuff like that. You know, there's just big, there's quite a big cavern for the voice, and I think I always knew for my first record I wanted the voice to be kind of at the centre, really, but also for it to be groovy, so, and atmospheric.
So the production credits on the record are for you and Will Bevan, which is Burial's real name. Why has it been credited like that rather than, say, you and Burial?
Well, the reason is that it's produced by me. I produced it from beginning to end, I guess. Will made the groove and helped me with a bit of the mix. And I mixed it down. The reason we credit as Will Bevan, he likes to kind of like have as little attention as possible. But I guess even, you know, putting his name, it's not gonna stop that because people know his name. But we did actually try it where he was actually producing it, and it was a Burial production. But I kind of, my album was moving in a different direction, and it kind of worked. As you know, it was really nice. It was like he's like a session musician coming to play on the record. So that's the kind of way we were treating it, like additional production. And he did it as Will Bevan because he didn't really have his kind of Burial hat on when, so to speak, when he was doing it. You know, I think if Burial had produced it, it would have sounded quite a lot different. It would, and we do want to do something together one day. I think it will happen one of these days, and it will be probably a bit more hardcore than like.
The funny thing is, as well, is because as Burial, he's worked with lots of people and done all these co-productions and these projects which are kind of in the pipeline, but none of them ever come out, or they very, very rarely do. So it's kind of funny that this one's come out, and maybe it's because his involvement is kind of very specific and kind of set within certain parameters. But I guess at some point you must have thought, I wonder if this will be one of the Burial things that doesn't actually make it out.
Absolutely, and you know, he's an amazing person to work with. He's got so many ideas, and he's so sure of his sound, and he's very free flowing. And when in the studios, he's a wonderful person to work with. But you know, he always says to me, like, sometimes when he hears my tunes, you know, oh, could you just let me do a little bit on that? And I think he just really vibes on other people's music, and doing that. And I've got a sneaking suspicion that he's been involved in loads of tracks that have come out recently that no one knows about. You know, I really respect him for that. He doesn't crave attention at all. He just wants the music to exist in its own space. For a while, I was very taken with that, and I thought, well, maybe I want to do that for myself. But I think as a singer, it's very difficult to do that. You know. It's very much part of my personality, and I've already been making music for a long time, so it took me a while to sort of see where I sit with those kind of ideas. But I really respect his decision, you know, the way his integrity, really. Yeah.
And do you see what you're doing as pop music?
100%. I always wanted to make pop music. I guess, you know, that's the exciting thing, was hearing sort of dubstep and bass music that's going on at the moment, you know, all around the world. Is, yeah, I felt like there was an opportunity to do some pop music that's influenced by that kind of stuff, and there's a whole wave of it coming out, which is an exciting time, I think. I guess the years just made us older, and I can't imagine life without you. How I built my world around you. We've been together so long now, baby. I'm seeing spirals, I'm moving with you again.
Jamie Woon enjoying the pleasure of Emma Warren's company there. I thought Jamie Woon's stuff, people, was really good. I really liked it. You really liked it too, Rosie?
Very much so.
Tayo?
I think it's fantastic. I'm a big fan.
It hasn't... That single, Night Air, which I was convinced was going to be a massive hit, once again displaying my brilliant foresight, didn't even actually make the charts. No.
But where does it get played? Like, who's going to back that in radio? It doesn't have an obvious...
One extra play it a lot, I think.
Do they?
Mm.
Rosie's given you your answer there, really. I mean, what we were talking about... I mean, you mentioned the sort of dubstep... the dubstep kind of influences. The people that I said before, like your Screams, your Bangers, your Caspers, Ruscos, Diplo, those kind of people, the fans of them are the kind of people who shout about it and bring that sound out with them to the clubs, to the radio stations that they do, the pirate radios that they do. Us who sit here and say that Jamie Wynn's brilliant and it should be a hit, not picking on you in particular, it's like you and whose army?
Who's
going to come out with you and make this a hit?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful piece of music, and it's the kind of sleep, you know, you get that with those kind of sleeper albums that inevitably get picked up for award ceremonies that no one else
knows. I was
going
to say, this sounds
about
like a Mercury nomination kind of record to me.
Yeah, so you've got the ones over there that that we love for because they're earnest, there's an integrity to them, and they're beautiful pieces of music. But who's going to buy? Who's buying them to turn them into hits? And I think that's the kind of that's a problem. If that's what they're chasing, then that's the kind of problem.
What you're saying is, if you want a hit, do it like Magnetic Man have done. If you're sort of coming to a degree from the dubstep scene or whatever, and you want a hit, do it the way Magnetic Man have done it, and aim it at the fluoro kids and make it a bit trancy and poppy and that kind of malarkey.
Yeah, I mean, I'd hesitate to say that they've aimed it specifically that way. Not least because they're my friends. I take your point on that one. Just go out and, you know, just bang it out and make, you know, they're probably very much in touch with their audience. If we keep talking about Magnetic Man, they're very much in touch with their audience. This is a piece of music pitched by two artists. And then try to be forced into the machine that sells records.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work like that often.
My brilliant idea for this kind of sound, and I think I may have said this already on the podcast, this is the album that Matt Cardle from The X Factor should make.
Yes, he did say
that. Would make it a hit.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, Tyre. He's got a great voice. He sounds a bit sort of like James Morrison-ish.
He's got an amazing voice.
Unusual because there's lots of falsetto, da-da-da-da-da. He's not, you know, almost uniquely on The X Factor, he's not a dick. You know, I sort of think, you sort of look at him and you think, I know, he might win. You know, he stands a pretty good job.
And then they'll put out a load of drafts.
Yeah, and then you know they're going to make a really shit album with him. And in fact, if they made a record like this, his voice would support it. B,
it would be good.
It would be good. C, it would sell. It would sell this music to a wider audience because the kids would buy it.
Pointing out that his voice is fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's very true. Yeah,
and that the production is subtle, is brilliant, and I could very much see myself, you know, sitting, listening to that at home.
Mm.
You know, I wish. We all do that. That's the kind of records that were hits, but you know.
Yeah, and I totally take your point. I understand what you're saying. I suppose the other chance for it is that it gets a Mercury nomination or something like that, and people start talking about it in 6 to 9 months' time. I'm sorry to give this album a bad prognosis because it is a really brilliant record, and I do urge you, good people, to go out and buy it. But you know. You probably won't. I mean, would you care what I think? You know?
Where's the Woon Army?
Where's the Woon Army? Hey, Woon Army, like it.
I like that.
Woon Tang. Night Air by Jamie Woon is out now, and the album will be out early 2011. So there's plenty of time to get those pre-orders in. Get down to the record shops. Order 6. Make a fantastic Christmas present. A belated Christmas present. Thank you. Time for Album Club now. We're not doing Singles Club this week. We're doing Album Singular Club instead. There has been an unbelievable amount of anticipation for Pink Friday, the debut album from Nicki Minaj. So much so that it's kind of overshadowed the almost simultaneous release of Kanye West's album, which is amazing because Kanye West's album is basically Kanye West holding up a sign going, I am mental, please advise. and yet Nicki Minaj seems to have got more press. The protege of Lil Wayne has guest rapped on records by Kanye West. I'm mental, please advise. Usher and Ludacris, as well as releasing her own material, including Massive Attack, which we have discussed. I think you brought it in, didn't you, Rosie?
I think it was Rebecca Nicholson, actually.
Was it?
I'll have to throw that to her.
Right, okay. well, Rebecca Nicholson brought it in, and we discussed it in the show. She fits what appears to be the requirement for a successful female rapper in that she's physically attractive. Hang on, I didn't write this. This is The Guardian. In that she's a strong-minded, independent person in her own right, as well as being lyrically proficient. We've all had a chance to listen to the new record, no thanks to a record company, I might add, and have chosen a track each to discuss. Let's start off with Tyre's choice.
All these bitches is my sons. And I'ma go and get some pips for him. A couple formulas, little pretty lids on him. If I had a dick, I would pull it out and piss on him. Let me shake it off. I just signed a couple deals, I might break you off. And we ain't making up, I don't need a mediator. Just let them bums blow steam. Radiator.
That was an earthquake, bitch. You felt the ground shake, right?
Yeah,
you bitches ain't fucking with her.
Put your number twos in the air if you did it. A woman appears to be suggesting that you actually show your appreciation of her work by pooing in your own hand and then waving it about.
I thought it was number twos, like your trigger fingers.
I thought it was your trigger fingers as well when I mentioned it.
See, once again, I've proved how undown with the kids I am.
I was going to say, Rosie,
God, you didn't do a shit on anyone's hand.
I think it shows that we're just like ahead of the game here.
I think I was just enormously behind the game. Tayo, you brought that, you chose that track out of everything that's on the album. It's called Did It On Them. Sure, number twos. Because she says, I shitted on them. And then she says, put your number twos in it. But they don't say no. Anyway, whatever.
It's quite hard to wave a number two, I'd imagine.
It depends what you've been eating. Ty, you brought that in. You picked that from the album. Why? Tell us why you brought that. You chose that one.
I picked that one from the album. I mean, that's a... I guess you said at the top, as a bass music enthusiast, it's got all the kind of... It's got the ingredients I really love in the track. It's got a rolling 808 bass line. It's kind of got that lazy dubsteppy style beats. If you took a vocal off and put that instrumental in a club, it would stand up by itself. And it's everything that I really appreciate about R&B as a genre, in the sense that it's a song which remains edgy, which remains sparse. It's got kind of the kind of club tricks that we'd appreciate over here from a UK perspective. And I mean, the producer calls himself Bangladesh, who produced Lil Wayne's A Millie and also Bossy, which was my favourite one of that particular Khalees album.
Oh yeah. Is that Khalees was here? Yeah, it's the one that sort of flopped, wasn't it? Yeah, but it's a great track, Bossy.
It's an excellent track. So it's kind of it's not what you'd expect to hear on US radio. Done by an artist who you would expect to hear, in the same way that you say the same about Missy and you know, the Timbaland and in his pomp, come up with those kind of beats. So that's kind of everything I appreciated about it.
Okay, it's definitely one of the better tracks on the album, Rosie. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely, and it comes right at the beginning. Number three and the two songs before this set up a great deal of promise.
It is an album that is top loaded in no uncertain terms.
100%. At this point, you're really excited about the album.
I first heard this first listened to this album. My kids had actually woke me up at 4 o'clock that morning, and I put it on about 9 o'clock, and I was properly like, I really want to go to bed. I'm really fed up, and I put it on. And by this track, I was like, this is properly exciting. This is the album of the year. And then I was a bit. Oh, no, it isn't. But we'll talk about that more in a minute. Rosie, we're going to move to the track that you have chosen to talk about.
Yes.
This is Roman's Revenge.
The moral to the story is life's treating you like dry side. Kick it back in his face. My God, it's Shady and Nicki Minaj. You might find a sight quite odd, but don't ask why, bitch.
That's why not.
The world is my punching bag. And if I'm garbage, you're a bunch of maggots. Make that face go on, scrunch it up at me. Show me the target so I can lunge and attack it like a... Like a dungeon dragon, you fell off. They must have pumped your wagon, you must have went off the back. I'm about to go off the deep and told you to stay in your lane. You just jumped in traffic.
Is this the thanks that I get for putting you bitches on? Is it my fault that all of you bitches gone? Should have sent a thank you note, you little hoe. Now I'ma wrap your coffin with a bow.
Nicki, she just mad cause you took the spot.
Word that bitch mad cause I took the spot.
Wow, I mean, that's just brilliant. That was Roman's Revenge, featuring a great guest appearance by Eminem. They're both going into their alternative personas. Yeah,
he's reprising the
Slim Shady.
The Slim Shady, and she's got. So before the album came out, I heard, you know, I knew that there was going to be this Roman Zelansky was the alter ego she was talking about, and I thought, oh my god, brilliant! The end of this track, she does this kind of 2 minute. Skit where she kind of speaks in a London accent.
She thinks she's speaking convincing. In a London accent. It could be anything, couldn't it?
There's a brilliant on one of her mixtapes she did. It's called Beef Stew. Absolutely brilliant. At the end, she just goes out of nowhere. All right, you coming to London, mate? Like that. It sounds exactly like that. It's brilliant. And all those things you think it's weird and it sounds brilliant and it works, and that's what you wanted for it. And so when I heard this track, I was very excited about what was going to come next because I thought she's being weird, which she does very well. And she's doing the whole duck and cover stuff, which she does very convincingly. She can be pretty terrifying.
Yeah, she's got that edge of panic thing to her voice that is not unlike Eminem's thing. Tayo, you like this as well, I think.
Wholeheartedly, I was going to say, I mean, you just said there's an edginess to it. There's a real kind of almost like a paranoia, like something's coming behind you, kind of, you know, with a sort of rising synth line. The beat never behaves itself.
No,
you know,
it doesn't do what you expect.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, there's a distorted kick in there from a producer point of view. There's distorted kicks in here. There's like the snare's a bit louder than you expect to hear on an R&B track. I mean, yeah. is this a multi-million-dollar selling artist going for it? And Rosie just mentioned about the mixtapes. I think that you get more of that vibe from her on a mixtape. Mm-hmm. From a edgy street level, and yet at this point you're hoping, well, this artist has just said kit and I'm gonna go for it, doing what I've done before. So yeah, at this point in anticipation was a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, I found this fantastically exciting. The refrain on it is the roar like a dungeon dragon is from Busta Rhymes' guest vocal on a Tribe Called Quest scenario, yeah. And I thought that's really interesting as well. It's keying into a much more kind of productive era for mainstream hip-hop, which is, I think it's 91 that Tribe Called Quest album came out. It's a lot of really intriguing stuff around at that time, you know, Ice Cube's early solo albums, all that malarkey. Great, 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 great.
And it's got my favourite opening line of the year, which is, I am not Jasmine, I am Aladdin.
Yeah, very cool.
But this is the Nicki Minaj on the Kanye track, Monster, as well, which is amazing. Just come in with a killer guest vocal and just slams off again. And you anticipate the same way that, you know, Biggie used to come in on so many guest vocals, and then you were ready for, you know, that's what Puffy did for him. It's kind of, you were ready when his album dropped.
Yeah,
and there's
absolutely
been this anticipation.
Yeah, I mean, she's a great, that's the thing that annoys me. I think we're going to move on to another track now, which will sort of explain our collective, I think, disappointment with the album. She's a brilliant lyricist. I think that's the other thing. When she wants to be, she's really, really dexterous, witty, funny lyricist. However, she also does, on the album, as well as those first two, I think, very exciting tracks you heard, she does stuff like this.
I fly with the stars in the skies. I am no longer trying to survive. I believe that life is a prize, but to live doesn't mean you're alive. Don't worry about me and who I fire. I get what I desire, it's my empire. And yes, I call the shots, I am the umpire. I sprinkle holy water upon the vampire. In this very moment, I'm king. In this very moment, I slay Goliath with a sling. This very moment, I bring, put it on everything, that I will retire with the ring, and I will retire with the crown.
That was A Moment for Life from the Nicki Minaj album. I brought this in to illustrate, I think, the sort of downside of this record. I just think it's kind of quite boring. It really starts right through me as the track where it starts to sort of, the album seems to fall to bits. And I think you can just tell by her lyrical flow on that track, which goes into a big old fairly sort of soppy chorus. She doesn't sound as if she's that enthusiastic about doing it. And I wonder if, left to her own devices, not worrying about what might get in the charts, what might not, she might have made an album entirely like Did It On Him and Roman's Revenge. Instead, she feels impelled, or has been impelled, to make stuff like this. And the other problem I have with it is it basically, you know, there is a real sense at the moment that hip-hop and R&B, at its worst, is this sort of sense of stasis. It's still in that kind of post-umbrella period, big icy rave synthesizers, little arpeggiated guitars, sung choruses, all that kind of thing. And the rest of pop music has caught up with it. If you listen to Radio 1 during the daytime, everything sounds the same because everything uses that sort of section of sounds. And I was kind of hoping this album wouldn't, and it starts to do that. So yeah, that's my thoughts on it. Tayo?
The thing about R&B is, at its best, it can be so brilliant, so what seems like such a kind of stringent genre, you can do so many amazing things with it, right? But also means at its very worst, at its very overblown, you get very bland, like you say, this goes through you, the chorus is hideous, it sounds like it's the last scene from The Wizard of Oz musical, and that's the real disappointment. I actually don't think that's the worst one on there. I'm really hoping that there's a disgruntled engineer somewhere who's going to walk out with all the hardcore cuts that didn't make it onto the album and bootleg. Not saying that we are advocating. I would love those tracks to come out legally on a smaller label somewhere.
So she has said in previous interviews that there was almost a whole other album on the tip of Massive Attack, and Massive Attack didn't chart. And Your Love, which is on here, which samples Eurythmics?
Annie Lennox's No More I Love Yous, yes.
Which I actually quite like for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But she obviously, and that charted, that did very well. I think it was in number one in America. So she just, so she tore up the blueprint for whatever she'd done before, and she's gone down this incredible, you know, attempting at pop route. Mm. But, you know, she's exactly the kind of person who is powerful enough to bring herself to pop music and make it very interesting.
Sort of impose herself
exactly.
on pop music. Yeah.
And that's what she's done, and that's why she's so interesting. And instead, with this album, it feels like she's just not quite reached the top and just looked far too much to what some of her peers may be doing and tried to replicate that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it's absolutely... I think I agree with both of you. I think there's exactly what Tayo says. So much money is thrown at these things that... You know, it's the proverbial little girl with a hair and a curl right in the middle of her forehead. When it's good, it's very, very good. When it's bad, it's horrid, you know.
The danger is, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, it's always annoying when it's a female artist, there's always an assumption that there's loads of people pulling the strings behind her. But I think in this case, you really detect the hand of an A&R kind of just pushing her. I mean, maybe it was her decision, but you feel like she's been pushed so far away from the natural territory. I mean, this is somebody who was a proper thug rapper about 3 years ago.
Right.
And nothing like the kind of, you know, Harajuku Barbie stuff that she's doing now, which I do like, but it's just that she's just so far away from where she came from.
The danger is that she'll have a hit with one of the more schmaltzy ones and then be surrounded with those kind of fans and be pushed more and more down that route. And I still weep into my Illmatic album cover at the Nas, who... completely excited me.
Yeah,
back in '92.
Yeah,
and the one who turned up 10 years later. Okay, he's redeemed himself slightly. I'm going slightly off track, but you see the point I'm making.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean.
That's what I'd worry about with any kind of street artist who gets loads of money and.
Why is Natasha Bedingfield on this album?
I couldn't believe that, because if you look at the guest appearances, it's like a litany of, you know, it really says this woman has arrived in the world of hip hop. It's Kanye West, Will.i.am, it's everybody, big names. Then at the end, Daniel Bedingfield's sister. What's all that about? We're going to listen to one more track, which I have picked out. This is Dear Old Nikki.
Maybe you died because everybody asked me where you at. I try to channel you in hopes that I could stare you back. But it's like every intersection, we just missed each other. You got your fans waiting, tell me you ain't 6 feet under. And tell me that you coming back and you just took a break. Maybe I blamed you for everything, that was my mistake. In hindsight, I loved your rawness and I loved your edge. Cause it was you who taught me down from jumping off the ledge. Your earrings bamboo, your long nails too.
That's Dear Old Nikki, another track. The reason I picked that, I think it's lyrically quite an interesting song in that it's an album on which she sort of develops a lot of personas and talks through a lot of personas. And this is a song that discusses a sort of age-old, I guess, problem in the world of not just hip-hop, but, you know, rock music generally, where people, artists, develop personas and feel they've become overtaken by them and don't know where their real personality begins and ends. And it's like David Bowie when he became the Thin White Duke and he ended up, you know, living off cocaine and peppers and storing his piss in a fridge so that people couldn't steal it and do magic against him because he was mad. And I mean, I hope that isn't the fate that befalls Nicki Minaj. So tying it all together, brilliant there. So Pink Friday by Nicki Minaj, which I think we're all agreed, slightly disappointing album, is out now. If you want to hear some wisdom from the lips of the Harajuku Barbie herself, there's a big old interview with her in this week's Observer. They went to New York. They met up with her, they talked to her, she said some stuff, they wrote it down. It's ace. Okay, a bit of feedback from last week's show on Brian Ferry. That's Brian Ferry. Brian Ferry kept saying every question that Rosie asked.
I'm very funny.
Of course you are, darling, yes. X-Person posted, any credit that Brian Ferry is due for his artistic contributions to the world, and they were considerable, is unfortunately more than cancelled out by his mindless right-wing views and his crime against humanity in spawning the appalling Otis. I can no longer listen to him without my stomach turning over. Yeah, people, don't listen to Roxy Music's first album, because like 35 years after it came out, the bloke who sang on its son decided he liked fox hunting. I'm sorry, I can't go for that. No can do. Next up, Ado16 wrote, something happened to Ferry's voice at some point. Yeah, it did. This is what we were talking about last week. That was the point he should have stopped singing.
Oh,
oh come on. That's really rough. Poor O'Brien. With his kind of funny old views about the Nazis and stuff like that. Well, come
and
on,
there's not
very little love. And his loony posh son. On Singles Club, Pino Clean says, great show. I agree the Nerd, or N-E-D song, is the bomb. The Arthur Russell re-edit was a bit dull. Get
oh,
off.
You lose. Oh, you lose Singles on. Club. Yes, didn't see that coming.
Did you hear what I brought in last week? Amazing re-edit of This Is How We Walk on the Moon by Arthur Russell.
Arthur Russell should always be celebrated. She's never.
Absolutely, absolutely.
No diplomatic answer.
No, it's not.
I'm a fan of Arthur Russell.
Yeah. Yeah, but when they said the NERD track, you were nodding your head.
Well, the NERD track is superb.
Yeah, well, Thin White Dork posted, least interesting podcast so far. You haven't heard this week, mate. Don't speak too soon, Thin White Dog. Still excellent listening, though. Thank you. Thank you, Thin White Dog. So even when we're bad, we're good. Yeah.
Yes.
Thanks for your comments. Remember, guardian.co.uk/musicweekly is the place to leave them. Well, that's your lot for Music Weekly. Thanks, as always, to Rosie Swash.
My pleasure.
And to our special guest, DJ Tayo.
Thank you very
much. Thank you very
much.
Come back in.
Can I?
Yeah, please do. When we this all came about with me and bumping into Tayo in a pub in West London a few weeks back, and you were going to come on and talk about Scientist and a bit of dub.
Yeah, I was getting really excited about Scientist at the time. Scientist has just been over in the UK and has been jamming with the Upsetters.
Wow.
And then doing kind of live dub mixing. And I went down and I had a chat with him.
Really?
And I think you're going to be putting it on in the next couple of weeks.
Fantastic.
Which is very exciting.
That's great.
Before I put it on my online radio station called happenstanceradio.com. That's for me and my brother because we run it together. Please feel free to check it out.
Scientist wins the World Cup. Scientist defeats the Space Invaders. Scientist comes on the Guardian podcast.
Scientist takes dubstep into outer space.
Wow. What a guy. What fantastic album titles. My thanks to producer Pete, who is leaving us.
Oh,
who this is his last
face.
Show. It is sad face. It is. He's gone on to better and more important things.
Not possible.
I know, I'll tell you what, he'll be back with his tail between his legs. It's been an absolute pleasure and a privilege working with you, mate. I'm Alexis Petridis. See you next time, Sensation Seekers.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.